This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hi, this is Gary Clinton with episode number 49 of Night Transmissions. I always wonder a little bit just how much I should go on in these introductions. I don't think I should really talk a whole lot. I know, or at least I think I know, that you're going to want to know when the show was aired, maybe who produced it, maybe what network it was on, but probably not much more than that. Most of what you want to know, they're going to tell you within a few minutes of my introduction anyway. In a few minutes, you're going to know that the first segment tonight is from Peter Lorre's 1947 mystery program, Mystery in the Air. You're going to know that Harry Morgan is the announcer. In a few minutes, you're going to know that tonight's story is an adaptation of a short story by the great Russian writer Alexander Pushkin. So how much do I need to tell you? Not much, really.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, presented by Camel Cigarettes.
But, Countess, are you sure you want to put all your winnings on a single card?
Absolutely sure, my dear Duke.
Well, I don't know how it is in Russia, but here in Paris, it is very seldom that anyone wins on three cards in succession.
The game of faro is the same in Russia as anywhere else. But I wish to put the whole amount, 400,000 francs, on my next card.
As you wish, madame. I will deal.
I have won.
No.
Look, I have won. See, Duke, you were wrong.
Yes, I was wrong.
Each week at this time, Camel Cigarettes bring you Peter Lorre in the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, The Queen of Spades by Alexander Pushkin.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre. Brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. Yes, just leave it to your T-zone to judge. Your T-zone, that's T for taste and T for throat, is your true proving ground for any cigarette. See if Camel's rich, full flavor doesn't get highest rating with your taste, and if Camel's cool mildness isn't more than welcome to your throat. See if you don't find, like millions of other smokers, that Camels suit your T-zone to a T.
The story I'm about to tell you, you may not believe, but I assure you it actually happened. Now, the whole thing started one night when a group of young officers were having a game of cards at the rooms of Narumov of the Horse Guard. There were five of us there, including a lieutenant in the engineers named Hermann. He was the son of a German who had become a naturalized Russian. And he was an ambitious young man of strong passions and imagination, which he held in check by an even stronger will. Thus, though a born gambler at heart, Hermann never touched a card, for he considered his financial position did not allow it. Oh, I remember that night. At about 4 in the morning, We all sat down to supper.
Oh, I'm not hungry.
How did you make out, Surin?
I lost.
You always lose, Surin. You must be very strong-minded to be so consistent.
You think he is strong-minded? How about yourself, Herman? Yes.
Me? Why me?
You've never held a card in your hand or made a bet. And yet you sit here until 4 o'clock in the morning watching us play.
Well, Tomsky, you see, gambling interests me. It interests me very much. In fact, I'm a gambler at heart, but I'm not in a financial position to sacrifice the necessary in a hope for winning the superfluous. In other words, I cannot afford it.
That doesn't explain anything. We none of us can afford it.
Oh, Herman's easy enough to understand. He's of German descent, therefore he's thrifty.
Right.
It's my grandmother, the Countess Fedotovna, who baffles me. You know, she won't gamble either.
Oh, lots of grandmothers don't gamble. St. Petersburg is full of them.
Yes, but they don't know the secret my grandmother knows.
Huh? Secret? What kind of secret does she know?
Something we'd all of us give a lot to possess.
Huh?
Yeah, a combination of three cards that can't fail to win at the faro table.
Oh, there's no such thing.
What are you trying to tell us?
Oh, let's go home. It's
late. Wait, Tomsky, I'd like to know more about the secret.
What do you care, Herman? You don't gamble.
Still, I'd like to hear about it.
All right. Many years ago, when my grandmother was a lot younger, she went to Paris. Oh, she must have been quite a sensation. The Muscovite Venus, they called her. Anyway, she gambled at faro with the Duke of Orleans. Lost a great deal of money, much more than she could pay.
Yeah, who does?
Come on, keep quiet, will you?
Well, there was at that time a Count Saint-Germain in Paris. Yes. A mysterious figure that no one knew much about. Be that as it may. He revealed to my grandmother the secret of the three winning cards.
Yeah. And did she win?
That night she played again with the Duke d'Orléans.
Yeah.
Played the three cards, one after the other, doubling her bet each time. And all three won, and she recovered everything she had lost 10 times over.
Oh, a little hard on the Duke, don't you think?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he dropped dead, I believe. It was a long time ago.
Oh, come on, Tomsky, go on with the story.
Well, that's all there is. My grandmother never touched a card again.
You mean she knows how to pick three winning cards in succession, and you haven't succeeded in getting the secret out of her?
That's the devil of it. She had four sons, one of whom was my father, and yet she would never reveal the secret to any of them. Though it wouldn't have been a bad thing for them.
Nor for you either, huh?
I've had enough.
I'm going home.
Well, I'll go along with you.
All right, come along.
Tomsky, tell me, this grandmother of yours, Countess Fedotovna, does she live in St. Petersburg?
Yes, with a ward of hers named Lizaveta. Poor girl, she is supposed to be my grandmother's companion, but slave would be a better word for it.
Your grandmother's a widow?
Yes. Oh, now, don't get your hopes up, Herman. She's a bit too old for you. She's 86 if she's a day.
Still, I should like to meet her.
No, there's not much chance of it, I'm afraid. She doesn't go about much anymore.
But I still should like to meet her, yes. I should like to meet her very much.
Lizaveta?
Hello, Paul.
Don't tell me my grandmother is here.
No, but she is going to the embassy ball tomorrow. Tonight, I came alone.
Oh, while the cat's at home, the mouse will play, hmm? What's this I've been hearing about you?
About me?
All very romantic, I understand.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come, Lizaveta. You can't tell me that you don't know about the mysterious officer who's been standing outside the house for the last 2 weeks. About the notes he hands you when you get into the carriage with my grandmother. About the letters he sends by the milliner's girl.
Who told you?
Great friend of your officer. A lieutenant in the engineers named Hermann.
Hermann. Oh, yes, I think I've heard of him. Is he nice?
Oh, I like him very much. But he's a very determined young man and means to get what he wants. Personally, I wouldn't trust him. He has the profile of Napoleon and the soul of Mephistopheles.
Oh, good evening, Tomsky. Good evening.
Speak of the devil. Hello there, Herman. Lizaveta, may I present Lieutenant Herman?
Mademoiselle?
The man we were just talking about. Herman, this is Lizaveta Ivanovna. It's my grandmother's ward.
How do you do, Mademoiselle Lizaveta?
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Would you like to dance?
Yes, I would like to.
Good. See you later, Tomsky. Oh, the This is paradise, Lizaveta. Holding you in my arms, feeling your heart beat against mine.
No, you mustn't say things like that. People will hear you. They'll talk.
I don't care.
They're talking already. Why did you make up that story about your imaginary friend to Ted Thompson?
Because I didn't want him to know it was I, and I had to talk about you to somebody.
I hope the Countess doesn't hear about it.
Devil with her. It's not the Countess I'm in love with. It's you. Oh, Lizaveta, this is so wonderful. It makes up for all those nights I stood outside your house and...
Look, there in the door. It's Contessa's coachman come to fetch me. I must go home.
When am I going to see you again?
I don't know.
Oh, but this is horrible. My heart is burning with things I want to tell you, but I can never, never see you alone. There must be some way.
There is a way.
Yes, how?
Take this.
Oh.
This is the key to the Contessa's house.
Oh, Lizaveta.
Tomorrow night, we're going to the embassy ball. We'll be home at 2. If you let yourself into the house at about 11:30, all the servants will be asleep.
Yes, I will.
Oh, directly to the library. It's at the right end of the corridor at the top of the stairs. Wait for me there.
Right end of the corridor. Oh, you sweet Lizaveta. I adore you. Where's the Countess' room?
At the other end of the corridor. Why do you ask me that?
I don't want to get into the wrong room by mistake.
But now I must go.
Till tomorrow night at 2:00. Au revoir, chérie. Mademoiselle, good night.
Good night, my child.
Countess, are you sure there's nothing you want me to do for you?
No, nothing, thank you, Lizaveta. I think I will just put my jewels away and sit quietly a while by myself. Good night.
Good night.
I am so tired. So very tired. I am too old to go.
What's that?
Don't be alarmed, madame.
Who are you?
Please don't be alarmed, Countess. I have no intention of harming you, but please...
How did you get in my bedroom?
I have been waiting behind that curtain, waiting just for a chance to ask you a favor.
A favor?
Yes.
Me?
Yes, a favor of you, madame. You can ensure the happiness of my life. It'll cost you nothing.
I don't know who you are, but you're mad.
No, I'm not. I happen to know that you can name 3 winning cards in order and...
Oh, that was a joke.
No, it was not a joke. Oh, I can see it by your expression, madame. Madame, I want you to tell me those 3 winning cards I do.
No, no.
But whom are you keeping that secret for, huh? Your grandsons, they are rich enough without it. Besides, they don't know the value of money, but I do. Your cards will not be thrown away.
No, no. It is a curse. It brings death.
I'll chance that. Of what use is it to you? Or is it connected with some terrible sin or some bargain with the devil, huh? I'm ready to take your sins upon my soul, only please, please reveal the secret to me.
No.
Please.
What I did.
You won't catch. I'll make you answer.
No.
I want
no.
You have my happiness in your hands.
No.
I'll take you to...
Just go.
You won't speak, huh? No. I'll make you... You... She won't tell me. She wouldn't tell me.
Are you all right? I heard voices. Comtesse, is everything... You?
Yes, it is I.
But I don't understand. Where's the Comtesse?
There she is.
Comtesse, what's...
It's no use. She's dead.
Dead?
Yes, dead. She's taking with her the one thing I wanted in the world. Without which I don't want to face life.
You killed her.
Yes, but... But you're not going to say anything to her. No one knows I was in the house except you. You can't tell because you gave me the key.
But you killed her?
Yes, yes, I killed her. I killed her. She deserved to die. But now I'll never know her secret. Never, no one will ever know her secret. Unless she,
Unless she comes back to tell it to somebody.
Experience is the best teacher.
Remember the wartime cigarette shortage? Who doesn't? One thing about it, though, smokers who went through it really learned a lot about cigarettes. They had first-hand experience with many different brands.
How true. Goodness, we certainly smoked whatever brands we could get in those days. I smoke so many different brands, I'm practically a walking encyclopedia about cigarettes. Well, I'm a Camel smoker now. And believe me, I know Camel's a cigarette for me, because I've compared so many brands.
Yes, smoking whatever brands they could get during the wartime cigarette shortage made people everywhere experts on judging the differences in cigarette quality. That experience convinced a host of smokers that they preferred the rich, full flavor and cool mildness of Camels. Result?
More people are smoking Camels than ever before.
Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel yourself.
Something about bruises on her throat.
Oh, no, no. No, nothing to it, no. The doctor said she could have inflicted those herself when she had trouble breathing.
Hello, Tomsky. My condolences.
Oh, thank you for coming, Herman. That's very nice of you. You never met my grandmother, did you?
No, I didn't, but that's no reason I shouldn't show my respect after all. You're my friend.
I beg your pardon, but would you gentlemen care to view the remains before the services commence?
I suppose I should, anyway.
Oh, yes, by all means.
I'll come, too, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Come along. Doesn't she look peaceful? Poor old girl, I was fond of her.
Wait. Wait, did you see that?
What? See what?
Look, one of her eyelids moved.
What?
I tell you.
Come on, be quiet.
But I saw it. Her eyelids moved. It's as if she winked at me. She winked.
He's fainting.
A fine example of an army officer fainting at a funeral.
No, oh, maybe he's sick. Come on, help me carry him out of here.
Oh, I know. I shall never get to sleep. My conscience won't let me. Oh, why did I do it? Why did I go to that cursed funeral? Just because my conscience said you are the murderer of that old woman. I wanted to implore her pardon, but she winked at me. I could swear it, she did. Who's there? Who?
You do not recognize me. You have a short memory.
Countess, if...
I have come back from the beyond against my wishes. I have been ordered to grant your request.
Grant my request?
Yes. 3, 7, and 8 will win for you. If played in succession.
3, 7, and 8.
But only on these conditions.
Anything
at
all.
You do not play more than one card in 24 hours. And that you never play cards again during the rest of your life.
What? Oh, I promise. 3, 7, and 8. 3, 7, and 8. Oh, I must remember it. 3, 7, 8. 3, 7, 8. Come in.
Oh, there you are, Herman. Are you all right?
All right. Yes, I'm all right.
Well, that's good. We were worried about you. We hadn't seen you since you collapsed at my grandmother's funeral.
Oh, that was terrible, Lieutenant. An officer shouldn't faint. I hope you'll forgive me for what happened yesterday.
Oh, that's all right. Could have happened to anyone.
Oh.
But it wasn't yesterday, you know.
Hmm?
It was the day before.
Day before? No, I don't remember that.
You must have been pretty sick to lose a whole day like that. What got into you?
Tomsky, will you do me a favor?
Uh-huh, if I can, what is it?
I've heard a lot about a certain Chekalinsky and the gambling that goes on at his house every
night.
Oh,
yes. Chekalinsky has practically spent his whole life at the card table.
That's what I heard.
Oh, he's amassed millions at it, but...
I should like to go there.
Oh, you want to watch them play Faro at Chekalinsky?
No, I want to play.
You want to play?
Yes.
What's happened to you, Herman? I thought you couldn't afford to gamble.
Yes, but now I can. I have a little legacy left from my father. And
congratulations.
I feel I'm in luck. When can you take me?
Anytime.
Tonight?
Yes, if you feel up to it.
Good, that's very good. We'll go to Chekalinsky's tonight, huh? Chomsky, honestly, I have never seen such a magnificent establishment. Never in my life have I seen such a place.
Well, it's all paid for by fellows like you who felt they were in luck. Look, there's Chekalinsky at the faro table.
Where? Oh.
Come on over, I'll introduce you. But don't say I didn't warn you.
Good evening, Chomsky.
Chekalinsky, I want you to meet a friend of mine, Lieutenant Herman. Herman? This is the famous Chekalinsky.
Good evening.
Enchanté.
Herman seems to feel particularly fortunate tonight. Do you suppose he could sit in and take a card?
A friend of yours? But of course.
Good luck, Herman.
Thanks.
Will you be kind enough to select your card, please?
Thank you. This is my card.
And how much would you like to bet, Lieutenant?
I would like to bet 47,000 rubles.
Forgive me, Lieutenant, but we only play for cash.
It's quite all right. I have it. Money's right here.
Are you crazy, Herman?
You're playing pretty high, Lieutenant. Nobody here has ever staked anything like that on one card before.
Well, do you accept it or don't you?
I accept it.
Then if you'll be kind enough to deal.
As you wish. 9-3.
Herman has won. Look, his card is a 3.
Well, congratulations, Lieutenant. Do you want me to settle with you now?
If you please.
Here you are. 47,000 rubles.
No.
Would you like to try again?
No. Not tonight, but tomorrow night I'll be back to try another card.
Well, Lieutenant, what do you want to wager tonight?
Same stake as last night, plus my winnings, 94,000 rubles.
Just as you say. You have picked your card. I will deal. Knave, 7.
Look, Herman's won again. The card is looking.
There you are. 94,000 rubles.
Thank you, sir. I shall see you again tomorrow night.
I don't believe he'll show up. He'd be a fool to know.
Here he comes now, with Chomsky.
Now, he can't win 3 times in a row. It's just impossible.
Gentlemen, quiet, please. Well, Lieutenant Herman, how much do you wish to bet tonight?
Same stake, plus my winnings. Here it is. 180,000 rubles.
What?
On one card?
Yes.
Herman, don't you think that...
Please be quiet, Tomsky. I know what I'm doing.
Gentlemen, please. Will you choose your card, Lieutenant?
I have it. Will you please deal?
Queen. Ace.
I win again. Ace wins. Here it is.
Huh? If you'd been holding an ace, you would have won. But you haven't an ace. You have a queen, and it loses.
What do you mean?
You weren't holding an ace, my dear fellow. You have the queen of spades.
Queen?
Look
queen
at it yourself.
Queen of spades? What? It is impossible. I have... Yes, it is. Yes, it is the queen of spades. Now I see it, but... Look it. It isn't the queen of spades. It's the countess. What? Look, see the resemblance? Yes. Oh. She's tricked me. She's deliberately tricked me.
What are you talking about?
Your grandmother, the countess. She told me 3, 7, and 8.
She told you?
Yes, she
did. You never met her.
I did meet her. I waited for her one night in her bedroom, and I pleaded with her. But she refused to tell me. She refused to tell me her secret. And then I took her by the throat.
And you killed her.
Huh?
You took her by the throat and
strangled
her.
I killed her, yes, but she didn't tell me that. But then one night she came back.
She came back from the grave and she told me three cards. It was seven. But she lied. She lied to me. Oh, that dirty woman. She's got no revenge. I've lost all the money I had in the world, but I don't care anymore. But I'll show her. Let go!
You murder the countess. You'll hang for that.
Let them hang me. Let them hang me. I'll get even with her. Beyond the grave, I'll get even with her.
He's gone mad.
I'll be glad when they hang me. I'll be glad when they hang me.
But they didn't hang him. He's spending the rest of his life in room 17 of the Obukhov Hospital.
3-7.
He never answers any question, but constantly mutters the same things.
3-7-8.
Cigarettes and free Camels to Servicemen's Hospital from coast to coast. This week, the Camels go to Veterans Hospital, American Lake, Washington, U.S. Army and Navy General Hospital, Hot Springs, Arkansas, U.S. Naval Hospital, Brooklyn, New York, U.S. Marine Hospital, Detroit, Michigan, and Veterans Hospital, Perry Point, Maryland.
There are many doctors among America's millions of Camel smokers. In fact,
according to a nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
This survey was made by three leading independent research organizations who questioned 113,597 doctors living in every state of the Union. What cigarette do you smoke, doctor? The brand named most was Camel.
Next week, Mystery in the Air, starring Mr. Peter Lorre, brings you one of the greatest American classics of all time, The Black Cat by Edgar Allan Poe. NBC.
The artists supporting Mr. Lorre tonight were Henry Morgan, Loreen Tuttle, Peggy Weber, Ben Wright, Louis Van Ruten, Stanley Waxman, Jack Edwards Jr., and Rolf Sedan. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camels.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Oh, I might want to tell you here that since The Queen of Spades is in the public domain, I've been able to chase down a PDF of the story and have posted it on the Night Transmissions website, which is www.nighttransmissions.com. I often do this where it's feasible and legal. I like to publish the original material, or sometimes just sort of ancillary material. For example, for tonight's show, there's an interesting adaptation of the story utilizing puppets. It's only 3 minutes long and well worth a look at. I'm having second thoughts about calling it an adaptation. It's really not. It's more inspired by. In any case, if this is at all interesting to you, what you want to do to find this is to go to the website, www.nighttransmissions.com, and on the left you'll see what's supposed to look like a book spine with a bunch of titles on it. If you click on the shows, an index will pop up, and if you look at the index, you'll find show 49. If you click on show 49, it will take you to the show notes page for this particular show. Then if you scroll down that page, you'll find a section labeled Extras. And in there, you'll find links to the Pushkin short story, and the video, and some other stuff that might come up later. I really do think it's worth a check. Yeah, okay, this is the first break for today. I know, you don't need them. But I need them. I guess I need them. You know how sometimes when eccentric people die, they leave eccentric wills? Well, that was the inspiration for this next show. In Australia, in 1946, somebody thought, hey, strange wills, great idea. And that's how this episode of Strange Wills, The Silver Buckle, came to be.
Strange Wills, featuring the distinguished probate lawyer, John Francis O'Connell, with an all-star cast, original music by Desmond Tanner.
Dead men's wills are often strange. We cannot attempt to understand them or try to find the answers. We can but tell the story. And here is the distinguished probate lawyer, John Francis O'Connell.
Old wills often make fascinating reading. Between the lines, we can see the man who penned the words. We can picture his life, build up his history. The will of David Garrick, most famous of all English actors, stands as a monument to the man himself. It is a fine example of a man seeking to be scrupulously fair, seeking to divide the great fortune he had amassed equally among his relatives. But David Garrick made another will, an earlier one. And it is the story of this will, the story of the Silver Buckles, that you will hear now. There have been countless stories told of David Garrick, of his rise to fame, his fabulous success as manager of the Drury Lane Theatre. Little, however, has been written of the story you are about to hear. It was David Garrick's secret, known to few of his many friends. Let us go back through the years to a room in London. It's a big room, well furnished. Before the blazing fire sit two men. One is the great Garrick himself. He sits silently, looking at the document which he holds in his hand. At last, the other man breaks the silence.
Well, sir, I suppose it's time you were retiring. It's been a big night.
Yes, Sam, a big night. But I'm not tired.
What's the matter, sir? You've been sitting here for such a long time.
Have I, Sam? Perhaps I've been seeing pictures in the fire. Or is it that I don't want to do what I must do?
What's that, Mr. Garrick?
Destroy this document I've been holding.
Why must you destroy it if you don't want to, sir?
It's useless now, Sam. It represents a part of my life that's over and done with.
Mr. Garrick, you're not sitting for something, are you?
Is that how I sound? Perhaps I'm sickening for something I can never have.
I don't know as how I understand you, sir.
No, you probably don't, so I'll tell you. See this, Sam?
Yes, sir.
That's my will. The last will and testament of David Garrick Actor.
I see.
It's not only my will, but it's a story. A story I wanted the world to know. Now that story's finished. When this will is burnt, no one will ever know about Rosa.
Oh, so it's Rosa's story, is it, sir? I witnessed that will, didn't I?
Yes, Sam. It leaves everything I have, everything I own to Rosa. Dear Rosa.
Look, Mr. Garrick, sir, it's very late. You've got two performances tomorrow. Why don't you get some rest?
In a little while, Sam. But you get along. Just leave me here for a while.
You'll be all right, sir.
Of course.
Anything you'd like before I go?
Nothing, Sam, nothing.
Very well, sir. And don't you sit up too late. You've got a big day tomorrow.
I'll remember. I'll just burn this will and then to bed. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sir.
Rosa. This is the last will and testament of David Garrick. To Rosa, all I have. I owe her everything. My career, my wealth. I owe her so much. I remember the day we first met. I was working for my uncle. There was a fair in the town, and I was there pushing my way through the crowd, past the orange girls, past the stall selling ribbons and laces, down to the tent at the edge of the fairgrounds.
See Mongo, the clown, the most famous, the funniest clown in the world. Come on, ladies and gentlemen, see the funniest clown in the world. Only tuppence, only tuppence.
I didn't have tuppence, so I sneaked around to the back of the tent, waited a while, and quietly lifted the canvas from the ground, and then you spoke, Rosa, from the shadows.
You'll get caught.
What's that? Who are you?
I said you'll get caught trying to get in that
way. What's all this here? Trying to sneak in, are you? Be off with you. Go on, off I say. And don't let me catch you around here again.
I only want to see the clown.
You should have known he would come around to see if anyone was trying to sneak in. You didn't wait long enough.
I waited too long, it'd be all over.
I could get you in.
Who are you?
My name's Rosa.
Why are you wearing those clothes with all those ribbons and bracelets? Are you part of the fair?
No, I'm a gypsy. Well, don't look so afraid. I won't put a spell on you.
I'm not afraid.
You still want to see the clown?
Yes.
Then come along with me. I'll get you in. But hurry.
You got me in, Rosa. Took me to see my first stage show. I was entranced and you thought I was silly. In the days that followed, you told me that often, as I used you for my first audience, practicing every gesture, every expression I'd seen the clown use. I can still hear your voice, Rosa. I hear it quite plainly.
But why do you want to be a clown? That's silly.
It's not. Just think, to be able to get up there in front of all those people, to have everyone watching you, making them laugh, making them cry.
When I laugh at you, you get annoyed.
That's different. When you laugh at me, David Garrick. But if I were on the stage, you'd be laughing at me being a clown.
No, I can't see the difference.
Now, look, you watch me this time. You watch.
To Rosa, all that I have, all that I am. Rosa, my first audience. You went away then, Rosa. Just went away. One morning I looked out over the meadows and all the caravans were gone. I had lost my audience. The months went by and then the players came to our little town. Once again I had no money. Once again I tried to sneak in without paying.
Here, here, out of here. None of that now. If you got some money you can come in. Off you go now.
And once again a voice came out of the shadows.
You're still trying to sneak into places, David?
Rosa, is it really you?
Yes, David, it's me.
You've come back.
Do you want to see the show? Quickly, I know how we can get in. Come on.
You got me in to see the players, Rosa, and suddenly I forgot I wanted to be a clown. I knew then I wanted to be an actor. And once again, you became my audience. A rather unwilling audience at times.
Oh, David, how much longer are you going to practice that one line?
It's a beautiful line. Listen, let me not go from you without some word that will... Oh, no, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, yes, it does, David. It's the way the men said it last night.
Is it really? You know, Rosa, I'm going to be a player.
When I was here before, you wanted to be a clown.
I've changed my mind. I'm going to be a player. Rosa, how long are you staying here?
No, I don't know.
Why do you have to roam round like you do? Look, why don't you stay here?
Stay in one place all the time? Oh, I wouldn't like that. I like to travel round, seeing different places and new people. Some of the big towns have proper theaters, David. Bigger ones, with a proper stage and everything.
Oh, I'd like to see those. Oh, but I'll never get away from here. My family say I'm to stay with my uncle and become a merchant.
But you don't want to do that.
I know.
Don't do it then. Why don't you run away?
Become a gypsy?
No, a player. They travel all around the country just like gypsies.
Oh, Rosa, I'd like to do that, but I can't.
Why not? If you want to do a thing, just go ahead and do it. Look, why don't you see those players? Perhaps they let you go with them.
I couldn't. Why, I don't know anything about playing.
But you've been practicing, haven't you? You go and show them what you can do. You might get a job with them, and then you go into a big town and become a great actor.
And I'll have my name printed on all the bills.
And live in a big house and have a fine carriage.
And everyone will talk about me.
Oh, David, you've got to see that man. You've got to be a player. Will you go down in the morning?
Will?
I'll come with you. I'll tell him how good you are.
But you didn't have the opportunity of telling him, did you, Rosa? I met you the next morning early. I was nervous, excited, trying frantically to remember all the words I'd learned the night before. And you were so angry with me because I looked untidy. So very angry with me.
Look at your hair and your coat. Oh, David, why didn't you make yourself tidy?
I had to hurry to get away before Uncle caught me. Oh, he'll be very annoyed when he finds I've gone out.
Oh, well, let me fix your coat. There, that's better. Now let me... Oh, David Garrick.
What's the matter?
Your shoes. You've lost one of your buckles.
I know.
Oh, why didn't you get another pair?
I haven't another pair, and I haven't any money.
But what about your uncle?
I couldn't ask him. If I had, he'd have wanted to know why. And if I told him I was thinking of running away with the players, he'd have locked me up.
Oh, but what are we going to do?
Such a fuss about my clothes. You're not dressed
up. Oh, it doesn't matter about me. I'm not going to be a great actor.
I wish we'd never started this. I'm going back home.
Oh, no, you're not. You're going to get some new buckles for your shoes.
How?
You know that shop down there in the square?
Where that fat man is?
Yes. Well, there are some nice silver buckles in there.
But I tell you, I've got no money and I can't get any from my uncle.
David, you wait here.
Where are you going?
I'll be back in a little while. Don't you go away, will you? Stay right where you are.
I waited, Rosa, there in the deserted street in the early morning. I never thought of what you were doing. I waited as you asked me to, as I've waited all these years for you. You weren't gone long, although it seemed hours to me. Suddenly you were there beside me, holding something in your hand.
Here, put these on.
A pair of silver buckles. Rosa, where did you get them?
Don't ask questions. Just put them on. You'd better give me one of your shoes. I'll fix it while you fix the other.
Oh, wait a minute till I get them off. Ooh, these cobbles are cold.
Give me that shoe, quickly. Don't stand there just looking at me.
But I'm a great actor, Rosa. I'll give you silver buckles for your shoes and gold bracelets and gowns of silk and everything you want.
If you don't hurry and see the players before they leave town, you'll never be an actor. Come on, put that buckle on your shoe.
Together we fixed the buckles on my shoes. I've still got those buckles, Rosa. One I've had for years. The other I got tonight. It brought me your message, Rosa. The message you said you'd send me. The message that means that our story is ended. All that is left is this piece of paper. The last will and testament of David Garrick being fed to the dying fire. We fixed the buckles and started off down the street. We hadn't gone very far when I said to you...
What's the matter?
Just keep her walking. Quickly. I'll meet you at the next corner. Keep her walking, Gabby.
But Rosa...
Do as I say. Keep her walking.
All right, if you say so.
Oh, what shall I do? I've got to get away somewhere. Down this lane here. Before they see me.
Oh. There she is. Let's go.
They see me.
Down here. Down the lane. Stop me. Stop that gypsy girl.
They're coming closer. Closer.
Catch you, you little freak.
Leave me alone.
Kill my buckles, will you? I'll teach you.
Let me go.
John Francis O'Connell will return in a moment to continue the story of The Silver Buckle.
Get wild, Ruth Cream of Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic Charlie. It's made with pseudolanolin. You better get wild, Ruth Cream of Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie, keeping all those gals away. Hiya, bully, get a bottle right away. Your drug is hazardous, a little goes a long, long way. You hear it screaming, keeps you looking neat all day.
John Francis O'Connell returns to continue the story of The Silver Buckles. Back down the years. Back in that room in the city of London, David Garrick sits by the fire, heedless of the passing hours. The fire is dying low, occasionally flaring up as he drops a sheet of paper on it. A sheet of a will that was never to be read by eyes other than his. And as the flames flicker, his thoughts go back to that day when Rosa stole the silver buckles for his shoes.
It was all so sudden, Rosa. I couldn't help you. I didn't realize what had happened. Later I learned that you'd escaped, and next morning you were gone. I was going to take the buckles and return them, but I couldn't. They were all I had to remind me of you. Every time I looked at them, I made up my mind that I would be an actor. For your sake, I'd succeed. Then at last, I went to Ipswich. I got a small part with a company. It was there I first met Sam. The first night I appeared, Sam inspected my costume.
Here, lad, straighten that doublet.
Oh, Sam, do I look all right?
No, you don't. His nibs, he don't like people going on the stage looking untidy.
Well, no one in the audience is likely to notice me.
Even if you're only carrying a spear, you've got to look the part. That's what he always says. Here, I'll set this ruffle straight for you.
You've been here all day, haven't you?
Don't I always get to town before the company does? Got the seat to the theatre. Yep, there, that's better. I don't know what you young gentlemen would do without me.
When you arrived this morning, did you notice if there were any gypsies in the town?
Gypsies? Now, what would I be doing looking for gypsies? Thieving lot of rogues they are.
They're not. At least not all of them.
I ain't never found an honest one. No, I ain't. Why are you so interested in him?
Well, I knew one. A girl.
Hi, Mr. Curtaintine. Everyone on stage.
How often have I heard that call since? 5 minutes to curtain time. In how many theatres? In how many towns? And in every town I looked for you, Rosa. Once I thought I saw you in the street, but I was wrong. Those were lonely years, Rosa. They were hard ones, too. Gradually, I got bigger and bigger parts, and then in 1841, I was in London playing my first leading role.
How do you feel, Mr. Garrick?
Oh, I feel terrible, Sam.
First night nerves, that's what you have. Seen him often.
Oh, I wish it were all over. Do I look all right?
Yes. Now for your shoes.
You've changed the buckles?
Haven't I been changing buckles for you for years? Though why you have to wear them particular ones, I can't imagine.
Well, they brought me luck. I wouldn't step on the stage without them.
Getting a bit old, they are, sir. Now, where'd you get them?
From Rosa.
Oh. Why don't you stop thinking about this, Rosa, Mr. Garrick?
I'll never stop thinking about her. I'll never stop looking for her either. Why, if it hadn't been for...
Hi, Mr. Curtaintine, Mr. Garrick.
Thank you.
You got everything?
Oh, yes, I think so. Oh, Sam, I...
Now, come along. They're out there waiting for you. Come along, sir.
Here, Mr. Garrick, now.
Good luck, Jamie.
Thank you very much, thank you.
Another couple of minutes and you'll be out there on stage.
Oh, don't talk about it. Sam, I can't remember my opening speech.
Don't you worry. Once you get out there, it'll come back to you.
Sam, my costume. Is it all right?
Now, we fixed all that in the dressing room. Look, the curtain's going up, Mr. Garrick. Go on, Mr. Garrick, and good luck to you.
Oh, thanks.
Ah, look at that in character already. He'll do it. He'll charm a Richard III they'll never forget.
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York.
Sam was right. They liked me. And at the end of the play, they applauded me. I stood in the wings with Sam and listened.
Listen to him. Listen to him.
Oh, they like me, Sam. They like me.
I told you they would. Out you go. Take another bar.
Oh, if only Rosa were here to hear this.
Hurry, they're waiting for you.
I'm going.
The greatest actor in London. That's what he's going to be.
The greatest actor in London. That's what I wanted to be. What I am. It was you who started me on the way, Rosa. And I've done nothing to repay you. And now it's too late to do anything. The fire's dying now, Rosa. The will is almost burnt. But the memory of that night remains my first big night in London. Back in the dressing room, alone with Sam after all that applause, all the congratulations, the praises, and Sam saying...
Ready to go home now, Mr. Garrick?
Yes, Sam, almost ready. You go along.
Ain't nothing more you want, sir?
No, nothing.
Then I'll be off. And Mr. Garrick, sir?
Yes, Sam?
I've been working round theatres all my life, and I ain't seen anything like tonight, sir.
Thank you, Sam. And good night.
Good night. And don't waste no time getting home. It's late.
I won't. My first big night, and it's a success. A great success. I'm an actor. I'm
the finest actor in all England.
Rosa, Rosa.
Hello, Dad.
Oh, Rosa, where did you come from? What are you doing here in my dressing room?
I've been waiting outside for everyone to leave, Dad.
To see you again after all these years. Now look. Oh, you look just the same, Rosa. You haven't changed. Did you see me tonight?
Yes, David. You made me cry, as you always wanted to.
That makes tonight perfect. A successful performance, and now I've found you.
I'm happy for you, David.
And you won't run away again. You'll stay with me, Rosa.
I can't promise you that.
I've never stopped thinking of
it. I've thought of you, too, all the time.
I love you, Rosa.
You mustn't, David.
Why not? Everything I have, everything I am, I owe to you. Look, I still keep the buckles.
Oh, all these years you've had them. Remember how I stole them and how they chased me?
Well, the last thing I saw of you, you were scampering down the street with half a dozen people after you. I tried to stop them, to tell them that I had the buckles, but no one would listen to me. Oh, Rosa, I've never forgotten that.
And now you have what you've always wanted.
I've got one thing I've always wanted.
You'll go from success to success, so you'll be famous.
But I want something more than that, Rosa. I want you. I want to marry you more than anything else. I want to marry you.
No, David, no.
But why not?
I'm a gypsy. I live in a caravan. I wander the countryside. But look at my clothes and my bracelets. I'm so different.
Yes, but you can change. I'll buy you gowns as I promised you I would, and a fine house instead of a caravan.
But you see, David, I like my life. I couldn't give it up.
Not even for me.
I love you. I always have. But we could not be happy together. You have so much to do.
I can only do it if you are with me.
You can do it alone, and do it much better.
But Rosa...
It's no use, David. Let me go now.
Then let me do something for you. Let me know where you are so that I can help you.
No, just let me go.
Rosa, I'm going to be successful. I'll have money. Let me share it with you.
No, David. I want nothing.
But you've done so much for me. To let you go now without doing anything in return...
Just remember me. That's all I ask.
I'll always do that. Rosa, you must let me know what's happening to you, where you are, what you're doing. Look, take one of these buckles. And if you're ever in trouble, ever need me, send it to me and I'll come to you.
I'll take it, David. And keep it always with me. Perhaps I shall see you again. But if I should die, I'll send this buckle back to you. Somehow. I shall send it back. So you will know.
When you walked out of the theater that night, Rosa, you walked out of my life forever. At first, I was angry that you wouldn't let me help you. And then I thought of the will. If I could do nothing for you while I lived, then after my death, I would help you. I would write your story. I would leave you my money. I would let the whole world know how a little gypsy girl had helped a great actor. For a while, I said nothing of my idea. And then one night, after I'd bought the Drury Lane Theater, I was driving home with Sam.
Just rolling in. That's what the money's doing, Mr. Garrick.
Ah, we're having a busy season, Sam.
Richard III, Othello, Lear. You've played them all now, sir.
Yes, I've played them all. Sam.
What is it, sir?
Tomorrow morning, I want you to come to my office at about 10.
Just as you wish, sir. It's a bit early, isn't it, sir?
I want you to witness a document for me.
Anything you like, sir.
It's my will, Sam.
Ain't feeling sick, are you, Mr. Garrick?
No, Sam, I'm all right. But I owe so much to Rosa... But when I die, I want everyone to know that. I'm going to make a will. I'm going to leave everything I'll ever have to Rosa. Here it is. The last will and testament of David Garrick, actor. The story of Rosa. There's the last page. There's Sam's signature and mine. The last page and just a flicker of flame left in the fire to destroy it. There's no need for it any longer. You see, Rosa, I got your message. It was a good performance tonight. There were crowds waiting outside the theater as I came out, and Sam had difficulty in clearing a way for me.
Make way there. Make way for Mr. Garrick. Come on, now. There's stand aside.
Careful, Sam.
Must get him out of the way, sir. Stand aside there. Let Mr. Garrick through. Ah, here we are, Mr. Garrick. Here's your carriage. I'll help you, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Three cheers for Garrick. Come on, now.
Give him a bar, sir. They expect it.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you all. All of you. Bless you all and good night to you.
Good night, David.
Come on, Mr. Garrick. Time you at home. The horses are getting impatient.
All right, Sam. Give the word.
Right, Saunders. Let him go.
What was that? Something landed in the cottage.
Here. What's all this? That young lad over there. He threw something in the carriage. Look there by your foot. Here, I'll stop the carriage and go after him. Throwing things like that might hurt someone.
Oh, just a minute, Sam. Look. Look at what it is.
It's a buckle, sir. It's one of your silver buckles.
Yes, it's one of my buckles.
Let me go after him. I'll find out.
There's nothing to find out, Sam. I know what this means.
What is it, Mr. Garrick?
It's a message from Rosa, Sam.
A message? How do you mean?
She's dead, Sam. Rosa's dead.
And so David Garrick sat beside the dying fire and watched the last of the pages of his strange will turn to ashes. Rosa, the little gypsy girl he'd so wanted to help, was dead. But David Garrick lived on to become even more famous. Lived on until he was old, and the memory of those early days had faded. But still with him remained a pair of silver buckles. His last link with a little gypsy girl. This is John Francis O'Connell inviting you to be with us next week. This is a Grace Gibson radio production produced by Reg Johnston.
Well, there was a David Garrick who was a prominent 18th century actor in London who did at one point own and manage the Drury Lane Theatre. As for Rosa, who knows? It's a nice romantic story anyway, isn't it? On September the 3rd, 1939, the war was in the news on the BBC.
All cinemas, theatres, and other places of entertainment are to be closed immediately until further notice. In the light of experience, it may be possible to allow the reopening of such places in some areas. They are being closed because if they were hit by a bomb, large numbers would be killed or injured. Sports gatherings and all gatherings for purposes of entertainment and amusement, whether outdoor or indoor, which involve large numbers congregating together, are prohibited until further notice. This refers especially to gatherings for purposes of entertainment. But people are earnestly requested not to crowd together unnecessarily in any circumstances. Churches and other places of public worship will not be closed.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley. Believe it or not.
The Death's Head Moth
was first seen in Blinkenwood, England, on January 30th, 1649, on the very day King Charles I of England was beheaded, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you the unusual story of the only people who never get fat.
Well, we're going to take a bit of a break right now, but we'll be back very soon with X minus one.
Here's a way to make sure you stay on your diet. Take a lesson from the natives of the Nuba tribe in Africa. They cut small portholes as the only entrance to their huts. By doing this, they keep their families very figure conscious. Any member of the family who does not eat sparingly eventually will not fit through the small opening and therefore is automatically barred from the house, believe it or not.
This next story is the May the 15th, 1955 episode of X-1. It's based on Robert Heinlein's 1941 novella, Universe, as published in Astounding Stories magazine for May of that year.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, -4, -3... -2, X-1, fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand would-be worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight, Universe. We are just beginning to discover how boundless our universe really is. And yet as man reaches out to the stars, out toward infinity, ironically enough, he may be building himself a new kind of prison. What would it be like to live all your life in a world no larger, say, than a single gigantic rocket ship bound on an endless mercy?
Look out! You all right?
Yes. Just missed me.
What was it?
A mutant with a slingshot, I think. Must have dashed down that passageway.
Want to go after it?
Oh, we'd never catch it, Alan. It's probably 12 decks above us by now.
I didn't think they ever came down this far. Trolls usually get them before they reach this level.
Well, they get more daring with each generation. Now, this one looked like a female.
Male or female, it might have killed us. I told you this trip was pure foolishness, climbing 24 deck levels to hear a crazy old man rave.
All right, Alan, we're almost there now. Let me see, compartment X, 15, level 24. Now, this is the place.
This area smells as if it hadn't been visited by a sanitation crew for generations.
Now, this part of the ship is almost deserted.
Yes?
Is this the compartment of John the Witness?
Who are you?
My name is Hugh Hoyland, cadet from Scientist Barracks. This is my friend Alan Mahoney.
What do you want of John the Witness?
Well, only to talk.
Are you a believer in Jordan?
Naturally.
I have heard that there are those among the younger scientists who doubt the word of Jordan.
To doubt is death. We're not heretics.
Ah, enter.
I've brought you a gift of tobacco, grown on the richest level.
Oh, it smells good.
I assure you it's of the best.
Wait here. I'll get him.
What a rat's nest.
Shh.
Well, what the devil do you think he can tell you?
Alan, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Well?
Are you John the witness?
I am.
Good evening to you. I'm Hugh Hoyland. This is my friend, Alan Mahoney.
What brings a gentleman of the scientist class to my humble compartment?
I've heard that you and your parents before you have been keepers of the legend of the ship.
Since Jordan gave the word.
I'm anxious to hear the word as Jordan spoke it.
Why?
Because our young scientists, well, among them, there have been some who talk against the word.
There are regulations against such heresy.
Still, some of them say the ship has no purpose. They say that we are here accidentally, that we have no more grace in Jordan's eyes than the most deformed mutant who dwells in the highest level of the ship.
What shall I say to you?
Well, I wish to hear the word from the mouth of one who knows, in order that I may become more convinced.
Sit. You have a gift for the witness?
The finest tobacco.
Good. I will dim the lights. Now pay close attention, for these are the words as my father's father's father gave them to his son's son's son. This is how the ship came into being, how our people were created. In the beginning there was only Jordan, thinking his lonely thoughts. Out of his thoughts came a vision. Out of the vision came a planning, and out of the planning came decision. Jordan's hand was lifted, and the ship was born. Mile after mile of good compartments, tank after tank for golden corn, ladder and passage, door and locker fit for the needs of the yet unborn. He looked on his work and found it pleasing, meet for a race that was yet to be. He thought of man, and man came into being. Then Jordan checked his thoughts and searched for a key. Man untamed would shame his maker. Man unruled would spoil the plan. So Jordan made the regulations, and order came to the works of man. A crew he created to work at their stations, scientists to guide the plan. Over them all he created captain, made him judge of the race of man. Thus it was in the golden age.
These are the true words?
As my father's father taught them.
But what of the strange beast-like people on the upper levels of the ship? Surely Jordan did not create them.
Jordan is perfect. All below him lack perfection. You have heard of the legend of Huff?
I have heard that he mutinied against Jordan.
Darkness swallowed the ways of virtue. Sin prevailed upon the ship. And before wisdom prevailed and the bodies of Huff and his followers were fed into the converter, some of the rebels escaped and lived to father the mutants. They are tainted with the sins of their fathers.
Witness, one more question.
Speak.
What is the ship?
The ship is a great sphere, 25 kilometers wide and 100 levels deep.
I know that, but the upper levels.
Regulations forbid us to venture into the upper levels, but it is said that beyond the levels of the mutants lies the forbidden place where Jordan's spirit prevails.
So I've heard, yet something troubles me. Something which prompted my coming here.
Yes, my son.
What lies beyond the ship?
What?
What lies beyond the ship?
This is heresy.
Answer me.
I will not permit such talk. The ship is complete. The ship is universal. The ship is everywhere. The ship is endless.
Your mutterings are those of a frightened old man. No. They answer nothing.
You question the word.
I think you lie.
Hear me, Mr. Hoyland. For what you have already said, I can have your body fed into the converter. Your soul launched on the endless trip.
You threaten me.
You, for Jordan's sake.
Do you think I fear this dried fig of a man?
You! Sir, my friend is impetuous. He does not understand.
I might be persuaded to forget a substantial gift.
Why, you pig!
You!
Alan, come on. The sight of this so-called holy man offends me.
No, you You shall not leave.
Don't try to frighten me with that gun, old man.
Remain where you are, heretic.
I warn you, put down that gun.
No, closer.
Drop it.
Very well, then. Death to the heretic.
Alan, get him.
Alan. He's not breathing. Is he dead?
I don't know. Come on, Hugh, we've got to get out of here.
Right.
Nowhere. We can't go back. They'd feed us into the converter before we could even... What's that?
An alarm. That old woman must have turned it in. Come on, Alan. The patrol will be here in no time.
Where can we go?
Yes, where? The upper levels.
No, the mutants.
We'll have to take our chances. Come on, Alan, let's go. Listen, that's the patrol. Come on, we've got to climb.
There's a hatchway down the corridor.
All right, quickly.
Oh, there will be fire.
Alan, up ladder. Up. Come on, Alan, come on.
Phew, wait. How far are we from the outside wall?
Judging by the slope of the deck, about 2 miles. Alan, let's try this passageway here.
If you hadn't asked him that stupid question...
Now, there's no use going over that.
But why did you do it?
I've been thinking about it for a long time. When he began to give me those stupid, tight answers, well, I just saw red, I guess.
Who are you to question the ways of Jordan? When you asked me to go with you to visit the witness, I thought you wanted spiritual help. I never dreamed...
I'm sorry, Alan. I'm sorry. I couldn't foresee this.
Wait a minute.
What?
I saw something move.
Where?
Near that bulkhead.
I don't see anything.
Maybe my eyes are going bad.
Listen! Your Highness!
Alan, look out!
No. What are you?
Throw that knife. Keep away from me, you.
Don't kill him. Not yet.
Who are you?
You must forgive my friend Bobo. Like so many of my people, he's rather impetuous where members of the so-called super race are concerned.
Who are you? What place is this?
As you can guess, from my leg, I'm a mutant.
Mutant? Where is Alan?
Your friend is dead.
Dead?
I was not able to restrain my people in time to save him.
Why don't you destroy me and get it over with?
We do not kill for pleasure, Mr. Hoyland. Only when necessary.
You know my name?
I read your identification tag.
Who are you? Mutants can't read.
My name is Gregory.
Gregory?
I'm a leader of my people. You see, although we are unfortunate in our heredity, Mr. Hoyland, many of us are quite intelligent.
And why do you live like animals?
We'd rather live like free animals than like regimented slaves, as you do.
I've heard you practice cannibalism.
Undoubtedly, you hear many things about us. You turn your head. Why?
That monster. I've never seen a creature like him.
Bobo is an unfortunate. He was born without the power of speech.
How can you tolerate such a monstrosity?
We've learned to live with difference. If we began to destroy our imperfects as you do on the lower levels, there would soon be no one left.
It violates the regulations. The word of Jordan,
you know,
states
Mr. Hoyland, your people are really quite primitive and barbaric.
You dare say that to me?
I dare say a good deal more. Let us go to my compartment and speak further. I'm always interested in information on the lower levels.
I'll give you no information.
Bobo. No. I want Mr. Hoyland in my cabin, please.
No.
I would advise you to go quietly, Mr. Hoyland. Bobo has a hatred of superior beings, which is unfortunate, but quite understandable. Proceed. Enter, Mr. Hoyland.
This is where you live?
Yes.
But you have books.
Stolen from your libraries, Mr. Hoyland.
Compton's Astrophysics, Philosophy of Interstellar Navigation, Celestial Mechanics. You've read these?
Most of them.
I had no idea that you... Why did you bring me here? What do you intend to do?
Do you believe in Jordan, Mr. Holland?
There is no other belief.
And the trip. I suppose you believe in the trip, too.
What else is there to believe? When you die, your remains are fed to the converter and your soul makes the trip.
And where does the trip take you?
To Centaurus, of course.
Ah. And where or what is Centaurus?
Centaurus is... Mind you, I'm just telling you the orthodox answer. Centaurus is where you arrive when you've made the trip. A place where everybody is happy and where there's always good eating.
And you believe this?
Well, the peasants believe it literally, but many of the younger scientists, like myself, know it is figurative and symbolic. Why do you ask?
Did it ever occur to you, Mr. Hoyland, that the trip is exactly what your peasants believe it is?
What?
And that the ship and all the crew were actually going somewhere, moving?
Ship can't go anywhere. It already is everywhere.
Imagine a place bigger than the ship. Much bigger. Bigger. With a ship inside it. Moving inside it.
There can't be any place bigger than the ship. There just wouldn't be any place for it to be.
Oh, for half's sake, listen. You know the lowest level?
Of course.
If you started digging a hole in the lowest level, where would that hole go?
It's forbidden to think such thoughts.
Where would it go?
I can't think about it.
Bobo, we're going to take Mr. Hoyland to the place.
No. Where are we going?
To the top level.
But that's certain death.
Nonsense. I've been there 1,000 times.
No.
Come along.
No, I won't. I won't. You can't make me.
I think we can.
No, please.
Now, shall we proceed peacefully, or shall I have Bobo persuade you? Open the door, Bobo. Inside.
What place is this?
This, Mr. Hoyland, is the main control room. Well, Mr. Hoyland, you're trembling.
It isn't true. No. No, there's no such place except in mythology.
Ah, you younger men are so wise, Mr. Hoyland, except for one thing. This happens to be the main control room of the ship.
Main control? But it's just a huge room with an instrument panel.
And what did you expect?
How do you know this is the main control room?
See these instruments? Using them, the navigator many hundreds of years ago actually steered the ship on its voyage.
I don't understand.
I didn't suppose you would. Sit down.
Very well.
Look up. What do you see?
A huge shield.
Watch it for one moment, Mr. Hoyland. You're going to see something that few of us have ever been privileged to witness.
What are you doing?
I'm dimming the lights. Don't be frightened. Keep your eyes focused on the shield above us. Ready? Watch.
It's sliding back. Ghost of Jordan.
Well?
What am I seeing?
The universe, Mr. Hoyland. The universe in all its beauty. The stars, the planets, the suns and moons and constellations.
No. No, it can't be. The ship is the universe. There is nothing but the ship.
Ah, but there it is. You see it before your eyes spread out like a canopy of glory. Do you still deny it? Answer me, Mr. Hoyland. Do you deny it?
No. No, I can't deny it. They've lied. They lied to all of us.
Good. Showed this to others of your people whom we captured, and though they saw it before their very eyes, they would not believe it.
Please. Please tell me all about it. Tell me the truth about the ship and about the universe. What are these things? How did this come about?
Many thousands of years ago, on a planet like those you have just seen, a planet called Earth, a scientist named Jordan decided to build a ship that would carry men from one planet to another. For many years, Jordan and thousands of others studied and planned. And when they were finished, they built the ship. A ship so large that it had to be assembled in its own orbit beyond a place called the moon. 60 years it took them to construct. And when it was finished, a whole new science had been conceived. Then the trip was begun. The trip that was to land a colony of Earthmen on a far-off planet called Centaurus.
millions of light years beyond the furthest planet ever reached before.
How do you know these things?
Among my books are the log, which Jordan himself kept, and the records of the journey for the first 40 years.
What happened?
There was a mutiny. A man named Huth led a rebellion of those who wanted to turn back. In the struggle, the navigators were killed. The crew fell into a state of anarchy. In the years to follow, small groups of men tried to organize the ship for navigation, and each time, they failed. Finally, the whole idea was abandoned. And so, for centuries, we have swung in space, unmanned, undirected, living in a lost world of our own making, without purpose, without direction.
Why have you told me this?
Can't you guess?
You want to finish the trip.
Yes, but I can't.
You can't?
Look at me, Mr. Hoyland. You see, a mutant, a man with a twisted leg. My people are outcasts, condemned to death if we so much as set foot in the lower levels of the ship. The main drive is in the lower levels where my people are forbidden to go. Oh, it would mean that both our people would have to work together. Our differences encouraged rather than denied.
All right. I'll see the captain himself. I have an uncle on the central board. I'll tell him what I've seen here.
And do you think he'll believe you?
Send one of your people with me.
That's asking a good deal.
I'm risking a good deal by going back.
Very well. Bobo will go with you.
Bobo? He can't talk.
There will be no need for talk. I will write a message guaranteeing safe conduct for a group of unarmed scientists to visit the main control room. Bobo will take you safely through our territory. What happens when you reach your own level is up to you.
One moment.
Yes, what?
You.
Quick, Uncle, let us in.
Hey, but this mutant.
He's harmless. Please, Uncle, please.
Now, what is this? You want it for...
I know all about that. Uncle, listen. I must see the captain.
The captain? Are you mad?
Uncle, you're a council member. You can get me to see him.
He'll kill you. You want it for heresy.
I don't care. I must speak with the captain. Now, Uncle, you're close to him. You can arrange it.
I don't understand.
Listen to me. The ship is moving. I can prove it. Do you understand? There is a purpose in the ship.
I don't understand what you're babbling about.
Now, never mind. Just talk to the captain. Tell him I have information of tremendous importance. Tell him I've arranged a truce with the mutants.
Truce?
Here, show him this paper, signed by their leader. Do it, Uncle, for my sake.
I don't know what...
Uncle, please, if I'm to die, let this be my last request to you.
Very well. I'll speak to the captain.
Say, Mr. Hoyland, that you saw this with your own eyes.
I swear it, Captain. I swear it on the word of Jordan.
Let me see the paper again. Commander Erst, what do you think?
I don't know, sir. It might be a trick.
I guarantee you safe conduct.
If these things are as Mr. Hoyland reports them, it would pay to risk a few lives.
A man is a convicted heretic.
Still, we must not discount his word. He has a safe conduct, and the mutant risked its life coming with him. I think we might investigate.
Captain, you mean you will do it?
I will have an expedition outfitted. Dismissed, Mr. Hoyland.
Thank you, sir.
Captain, do
Commander
you...
Erst.
Sir.
You will make the necessary arrangements for an expedition. And I trust you understand.
Perfectly, sir. Perfectly.
Lieutenant.
Mr. Harlan.
Oh, you better halt your men here. This is the spot.
Patrol! Halt! Well, I see no welcoming party of mutants.
There'll be none. Their leader will meet you inside the main control room.
You You don't say. Just where is this main control room?
Beyond that door.
I see. All right, men. Ready arms.
Lieutenant, why do you ready arms?
In case of ambush.
Ambush? Now, wait a minute, Lieutenant. What are those men doing with that ray gun?
Just aiming it at the door.
Are you mad?
No, Mr. Hoyland, but most certainly you are to think that we could be lured up here to be slaughtered with a fantastic story about some mythical control room.
Guns ready,
Lieutenant,
sir.
Lieutenant, I warn you, these people have acted in good faith. You can't break that faith.
Oh, mutant! Come out!
For Jordan's sake, hold Lieutenant!
It. A little too quiet for comfort. Mutant! Open the door!
Please, Jordan. Don't let anything happen. Don't let...
All right, it's opening. Ready, men. Someone's coming out. Steady.
Gregory, stay back!
Fire!
You fools! You've killed him!
Here come the rest of them. Fire! Fire!
Fools!
That should teach him a lesson they won't forget. All right, men, inside the room. Come on, Harlan. You're under arrest as a conspirator in this ambush.
Ambush, you fool. You blind, stupid fool.
All right, that'll be enough. You've been inside this place before?
Yes.
What's this machinery?
These are the controls he would have used to steer the ship.
He's gone out of his mind, Lieutenant.
Steer the ship? Who?
The leader, the one you killed.
This ugly mutant?
This ugly mutant. Happened to be a man of true genius.
Why, you're mad.
Am I? Lieutenant, this man had a vision which would have saved you, but you chose to kill him because you couldn't stand the sight of his difference from you.
Shut up, Hyland. Don't listen to him, man.
You can't shut your eyes and you can't shut your minds and you can't shut your ears to this.
The rope's moving back.
Yes, look. Let the vision of this confound your ignorance and blind your eyes. This is the heritage of stars and open skies for which men have yearned for centuries. Try to destroy this, and you will only destroy yourselves. Death to the heritage. Die! But I say to you that you can't keep this from our people. They will seek it out. The ship will be manned. And the ship will be steered. And there will be freedom, purpose, and respect for ourselves. This is your heritage. Look. Look upon the universe.
Kill him. Kill him.
X-1 has just brought you Universe, a story written by Robert Heinlein and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Heard in the cast were Donald Buca as Hugh, Peter Capel as Gregory, Bill Griffiths as Alan, Abby Lewis as the woman, Edgar Staley as the witness, Jason Johnson as the uncle, John Seymour as the captain, and Ian Martin as the lieutenant. Your announcer is Fred Collins. X-1 is directed by Fred Way and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production.
When you buy United States savings bonds, you help to build your own future security. Here's an opportunity to save systematically for long-range personal objectives. So invest in United States savings bonds.
X-1.
As soon as Einstein's whole relativity thing started being taken seriously, and it really did begin to look like faster than light travel was impossible. Well, science fiction writers didn't like that too much, and they began to try to figure out ways to get around that limitation. This isn't the first generation ship story ever told. It's darn near the first. As near as I can tell, it is preceded only by a story by Don Wilcox that was published in Amazing Stories the year before, in October of 1940, the journey that lasted 600 years. Generation ships would become a staple of science fiction throughout the 1940s and 1950s into the 60s, generating literally hundreds of stories. Hyman himself would write a sequel to Universe called Common Sense, which would then later be combined with Universe and published as the novel Orphans of the Sky in 1962. And another break. Hopefully this will be the last one. For our final show tonight, we have an episode of the 1935 series, The Origin of Superstition. There are 39 episodes of this, each detailing, well, not surprisingly, I suppose, the origin of one superstition or another. The particular one we have tonight deals with a superstition that, I guess is prevalent among jockeys and other people, that if you put your hat on backwards, it'll bring bad luck. The only superstition I know about involving hats is really a superstition about cats, black cats to be specific. It's the one where if a black cat passes your path while you're driving, you need to turn your hat around and draw an X on the windshield to ward off bad luck. Instead of turning your hat around, you can take it off and spit in it. Evidently, then you don't need to draw the X. Or, of course, you can just turn around and go back the way you came. I'd rather do that than spit in my hat.
For generations, I have held mankind in bondage, chained by fear and ignorance. I have dictated to kings and lingered in the dark corners of peasants' hovels. My name is Legion, and my power unending.
It was mighty nice of you to bring me out to your country club, Dick. Reminds me of mine down in the bluegrass region of Kentucky.
I couldn't offer you any horse racing, so I took a chance on golf. Boy, look here where that last drive has brought me. A perfect putt position if I ever saw one.
Well, for goodness sake, I never saw such luck.
Not luck, Tom, just good playing. Well, here we are. Now, let's see. My putter, Caddy. I think I'll sink her this way.
Stop! Hey, what the...
Now, see what you've done? Made me miss a sure shot.
Your head, your head.
Well, what's the matter with my head?
Oh, you've turned your cap backwards. Bad luck always follows when a person does that.
Well, I'm a... And is that why you gave that unholy yell?
Why, surely. Why, in Kentucky, no jockey would think of riding in a race with his cap turned backwards. He couldn't win if he had the best horse in the world.
You superstitious southerner. I know that story. It probably started because some ancient Norseman clapped his helmet on backwards when his ship was attacked and got killed in battle. But I'd be willing to wager that there were many more of his soldiers killed who wore their helmets correctly.
Now you're funning me. But no Kentucky jockey would take your bet.
Let's wait for this party to go through, and before we tee off again, I'll tell you just how foolish your pet superstition is.
Well, go ahead. I'm a patient man.
My first sight of the Kentucky Derby was in 1915. I was all set to bet on a beautiful little filly that had entered that year, but my wiseacre southern friends told me that it was impossible for a filly to win the Derby. One never had. The cards were stacked against him. Well, past performances carried out this superstition, so I placed my bets on the favorite. The filly won.
Astounding.
You're telling me? Then and there, I made up my mind to bet on the unluckiest-looking horse on the field the next time I attended a Derby. Sometime after that, I had business connections with a Kentucky gentleman, Mr. McVoy. He owned an excellent stable, and his prize horse, Lucky Star, was entered in the coming Derby.
Lucky Star? Why, I've seen him run many times.
Sure you have. He's made his name. But this was his first race. And to give him every chance against formidable competition, McVoy imported a famous northern jockey, Duke Matthews. The day of the race dawned bright and clear. Everything seemed perfect to McVoy and his charming daughter, Delia. But not taking any chances on anything going wrong, we all visited the Derby stables just before the race.
And look at Highball grooming that horse, will you?
Yes, sir. And Lucky Star, I'm liable to turn into a skyrocket before the day's done. He's dead anxious to get going.
Oh, Daddy, Dick, isn't he beautiful? Hello, honey horse. Are you glad I came to see you?
Can he run, Delia?
Now, Dick Tanner, stop tormenting me. Can Lucky Star run? Highball, defend your horse.
Why, did your horse? I'm a running fool, Master Tanner.
Hey, here comes his jockey. You feeling fit, Duke?
You bet, sir. We're going to win the day. I know it.
You'd better win, Duke Matthews. You're riding a good horse.
Don't worry, miss. I dreamed of a white horse last night, and today I see you, a red-headed girl. That makes me a cinch to win.
What, you too, Matthews? I wonder that the horses can run at all with all this superstition in the air.
Oh, you be careful now. Don't start telling about that filly that you didn't bet on in the race of 1915. You don't think there's a grain of truth in our Kentucky superstition?
Of course not.
Well, you've come to the wrong state if you want to get away from superstition, Dick.
Yes, sir. Didn't I offer that Lucky Star a drink a little while ago? And didn't that horse turn up his nose at it? That a sure sign he wins.
And I touched Sam the hunchback as we came in, Daddy, just for luck.
Ye gods, I'm licked.
Well, there's the signal. Let's go to our seats for the lineup. Good luck to you, Duke.
And let me give Lucky Star a last pat on the nose. You must win, boy. You must.
Come on, Delia, before you start drawing magic circles around that horse. A good ride, Duke.
Thank you, sir. I'll do my best.
Grand seats, Daddy. Isn't it exciting, Dick?
Marvelous. Colorful crowd, hmm? Say, isn't that the governor over there?
Yes. Yes, he's quite a racing fan.
Well, who's the favorite?
Dundee. But there's also heavy betting on Lucky Star. The odds were almost even the last time I visited the bookies. It'll be a proud day in my life if that horse wins, Dick. I've dreamed of this ever since he was a colt.
I certainly hope he wins, but I hate to see you and Delia pin so much faith on superstition. After all, the horse and jockey run the race, not superstition.
You just wait and see. Oh, look, look, Daddy, here they come. Oh, wonderful. Use your glasses, Dick.
By George, aren't they beauties?
The best horse flesh in Kentucky, Dick. And most of those colors you see there are time-honored, too.
Win or lose, a good horse race is a thrill that can't be equaled. Uh-oh, here comes Lucky Star.
Yes.
Just look at him step out and arch his neck.
He's almost dancing to the music.
Watch Duke. He's as proud as a bantam rooster.
Oh, yes, then. Oh, Daddy, look at you.
Well, what's wrong, child? Good heavens, what?
What on earth's the matter with you two? You look as if you'd seen a ghost.
Duke, Cap, he's turned it round since leaving us. He's wearing it backwards.
What of it?
Well, no Kentucky jockey would think of doing a thing like that. Well, he can't win now.
Oh, nonsense.
Oh, whatever possessed him to change it. Can't we get him before the race starts? We must warn him.
Oh, there isn't time, Delia.
Great Scott. Whether he wears his cap upside down or inside out won't affect his riding or Lucky Star.
You're a fool, Dick Tanner. And if Lucky Star loses, I'll never speak to you again.
Oh, poor Lucky Star. That's a good boy. Easy now. Up against the tape. Poor boy.
Say, Yankee, do you all expect to have a chance to win with your cap turned around like that?
What's wrong with my cap? Poor boy. I always wear it this way, and I've won more races than you've lost, and that's plenty.
Listen here, boy, don't get tough with me. Ain't a horse in Kentucky can beat Dundee here. This is one race you won't win.
Says you. Hey, you and Dundee, quit crowding me. I'll show you whether I can win or not, hat and all hat. Ho-ho, wait till that barrier goes up and you'll be chewing my dust, boy.
Daddy, Daddy, I'm so excited. I can hardly wait. Look, look, they're all ready. Oh! Oh, come on. Oh. Oh. Dundee crowded Lucky Star at the start. Oh, look, Daddy, he's raring.
Oh, no, child, I know, but he's down now. Duke's controlled him.
Look at that horse go. He's giving Duke everything he has, and that jockey's using it.
It's no use. He'll never make up that loss. I told you he'd killed his luck when he turned his cap round.
Look, look, Duke's gaining the rail. Lord, that man rides like a devil. Say, near as I can make out through these glasses, something has made him angry.
By heaven, he'll kill that horse if he ain't careful.
He's shouldered out number 7.
He's past the rear guard as if they were standing still. Now he's creeping up on the leaders. What a horse!
And I'm proud of him. Even if he doesn't win, I'm proud.
But I tell you, he'll win in spite of your superstition. Watch, he's cutting the lead down by yards.
But they're over the halfway mark. He'll never have time to nose out Dundee.
Oh, there's a chance, Delia, there's a chance.
There's a darn good chance. Look, here they come now. Lucky Star is forging ahead by leaps and bounds.
And Dundee's jockey is looking back over his shoulder.
Duke seems to be shouting something to
him. And he's laughing. Daddy, he's laughing. Oh, Lucky Star, honey, come on, come on.
And neck and neck.
Along, almost at the line. Run, horse, run.
Daddy, Daddy, he's won by inches. Lucky Star is won.
And your horse wouldn't win because the jockey wore his hat backwards.
I think you're mean, Dick Tanner. Make fun of me all you please. But don't forget that Highball told us that Lucky Star would not drink before the race.
That's right, Dick. That made him a sure winner.
You certainly protect yourselves. But if you knew he was a sure winner, why all the excitement over the cap?
Well, you have me licked on that score, Dick, but you'll have to admit that you didn't make this hole in par. And you know why?
Why?
Because I turned my cap around.
Listen, I missed the hole because you made me jump when you hollered about the cap. Otherwise, I'd have sunk that ball nicely.
No, I don't think so.
Now, Tom, I don't like to argue over golf. But I know I'd have succeeded if you hadn't interfered with my stance.
Oh, yeah? Well, superstitious or not, something tells me that it would be healthier for us to continue playing.
You said it. And I can still beat your score. But to make sure, I'll stick my cap in my pocket.
I am superstition. You don't believe, do you?
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a special bulletin from Washington. Price Administrator Prentice M. Brown announces that effective today, shoes are rationed. This includes all shoes with leather or rubber soles. Wartime requirements make this necessary. Every person will be entitled to buy one pair of new shoes during the next 4 months. There are only three things you must know. First, no shoes may be sold to consumers until Tuesday. Second, beginning Tuesday, every person is entitled to buy one pair of shoes with stamp number 17 of War Ration Book 1, the Sugar and Coffee Book. Third, the shoe stamp from the ration book of one member of a family may be used for any other member of that family group living in the same household. And here's a special word for shoe dealers. Remember, shoes cannot be sold at retail until Tuesday morning, but dealers may make and receive shipments and place orders as usual within the trade. Beginning Tuesday, retailers must collect stamp number 17 from War Ration Book 1 for every pair sold to consumers. Supplies are large enough to provide everyone with shoes and to give everyone his fair share. Good night, everybody.
Well, it's all over now except for the singing. If you got anything you want to tell me, you can always get in touch with me at nighttransmission@gmail.com, or you can go to the website, www.nighttransmissions.com, and register your opinion there by hitting the contact button.
It's been raining in the mountains and the river's on the rise, and we cannot hardly reach the other side. And the devil, he's in trouble, I can see it in his eyes. If you don't give him shelter, he'll have no place to hide. The devil deals in dying and he travels in a hearse. He treats you like a dog now, he like to treat you worse. But he don't have the answers, and if he did, he'd lie. The devil is a joker, and I don't want you alive. And some you win, and some you lose, and the winners all grin, and the losers say, deal the cards again. Oh, won't you deal the cards again? L.A.'s in California, Lord, I've been there many times. It is an education, to be sure. I loved a lovely lady there, she opened up my eyes. She ran a dancing school, it was a front, she loved the Lord. It's been raining in the mountains and the rivers on the rise. Then we cannot hardly reach the other side. And the devil, he's in trouble, I can see it in his eyes. If you don't give him shelter, he'll have no place to hide. It's been raining in the mountains and the rivers on the rise. Then we cannot hardly reach the other side. And the devil, he's in trouble, I can see it in his eyes. If you don't give him shelter, he'll have no place to hide. Oh, and raining in the mountains and the rivers on the rise. Then we cannot hardly reach the other side. And the devil, he's in trouble, I can see it in his eyes. If you don't give him shelter, he'll have no place to hide. The devil deals in dying, and he travels in a hearse. He treats you like a dog now, he like to treat you worse. But he don't have the answers, and if he did, he'd lie. The devil is a joker, and he don't want you alive. And some you win, and some you lose, and the winners all grin, and the losers say, deal the cards again. Oh, won't you deal the cards again? L.A.'s in California, Lord, I've been there many times. It is an education, to be sure. I loved a lovely lady there, she opened up my eyes. She ran a dancing school, it was the front, she loved the Lord. It's been raining in the mountains and the rivers on the rise. And we cannot hardly reach the other side. And the devil, he's in trouble, I can see it in his eyes. If you don't give him shelter, he'll have no place to hide.
I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will I keep on thinking about you, sister, golden hair surprise? And I just can't live without you. Can't you see it in my eyes? I've been one poor correspondent, and I've been too hard to find. But it doesn't mean you ain't been on my mind. saying, I just can't make it.
First cousin called Arthur McBride. He and I took a stroll down by the seaside, a seeking good fortune and what might betide. It was just as the day it was dawning. Then after resting, we both took a tramp. We met Sergeant Harper and Corporal Cramp. Besides the wee drummer who beat up Recamp, with a rowdy dow dow in the morning. He says, my young fellows, if you will enlist, a guinea you quickly shall have in your fist, besides a crown for to kick up the dust, and drink the king's health in the morning. Had we been such fools as to take the advance, the wee bit of morning we had a rum chance. Would you think it no scruple to send us to France, where we would be killed in the morning? Says, my young fellows, if I hear but the word, I instantly now will out with my sword, and into your bodies as strength will afford. So now, my gay devils, take warning. But Arthur and I, we took the odds, and we gave them no chance for to launch out their swords. For whacking shillelaghs came over their heads, and played them right smart in the morning. As for the wee drummer, we rifled his pouch, and we made a football of his rowdy-dow-dow, and into the ocean to rock and to roll, and we batted a tedious returning. As for that old rapier that hung by his side, we flung it as far as we could in the tide. To the devil I pitch you, says Arthur McBride, to temper your steel in the morning.
Blackjack Dave come a-riding through the woods a-singing a song so gaily. He sang so loud he made the wildwoods ring, and he charmed the heart of a lady, charmed the heart of a wife. The old man came a-riding home that night, asking for his lady. servant spoke before he thought, she's gone to Blackjack Davy, gone to Gypsy Boy. Saddle for me, my big black horse, my $100 saddle. Point out to me the wagon tracks, and after them I'll travel, after them I'll ride. He rode off towards the midnight moon, saw their campfires gleaming. Heard the sound of a big guitar, and the voice of Slady singing a song of the gypsy boy. Forsaken your house and home, have you forsaken your baby? Have you forsaken your husband, dear, to go with the Blackjack Davy, go with the Gypsy Boy? Yes, I forsaken my house and home, and I forsaken my baby. I forsaken my husband, dear, to sing with the Blackjack Davy, lie with the Blackjack Davy, love the Blackjack Davy, squeeze the Blackjack Davy, lie in the mud and the rain.
Bunch of lonesome and very quarrelsome heroes were smoking out along the open road. The night was very dark and thick between them. Each man beneath his ordinary load. I'd like to tell my story, said one of them so young and bold. I'd like to tell my story before I turn into gold. But no one really could hear him, the night so dark and thick and green. But I guess that these heroes must always live there, where you and I have only been. Put out your cigarette, my love, you've been alone too long, and some of us are very hungry now to hear what it is you've done that was so wrong. I sing this for the crickets, I sing this for the army, I sing this for your children, and for all who do not need me. I'd like to tell my story, said one of them so bold. Oh yes, I'd like to tell my story, 'cause you know I feel I'm turning into gold.